We are finally at Monaco after a season off. David, we're starting. Just want to make sure you're clear where
we're. Do we need
There's
a clap?
Gonna be no count. There's going to be no countdown, no clap.
No, we're just going into it, man. We're just doing this dirty. Excited about Monaco now having been a year off? I know this is one of our favorites, even though it's not everybody else's favorites. I know the three of us love Monaco.
I do love Monaco.
Am I excited about Monaco? Well, let's see here.
Hey, yo. Nice.
Yes, I'm excited about Monaco with the shirt I got in Monaco. Yes, I'm excited.
TJ, do you have a monogram or a moniker or whatever the hell they call them on your shirt, your pants?
No, I've got a black shirt on. I think it's my first time not wearing a collared shirt on camera. So couldn't be bothered today because we had practice on Thursday for once.
Yes. And by the way, does anybody know the history as to why they host practice on Thursday at Monaco?
I thought it was related to the bank holiday, but I guess it's not. I guess it's something else, right?
Yeah, no, that's part of it. They call it Ascension Day, I think. The Feast of the Ascension of Jesus Christ, and also the bank holiday.
Because Pentecost is coming up on Sunday. So yeah,
which tends to happen for that reason. So that's why we don't practice on Fridays in Monaco. So if you didn't know that, to all you fans out there, that Monaco, we don't practice on Fridays in Monaco. That's the tradition that's held. So
it's a day reserved for drinking on your yacht.
Apparently. Yeah. And, you know, Monaco is the weekend when everybody's invited, all the commercial partners. This is when they come and do the deals. A lot of contracts are signed, whether it's commercial driver, even though if we don't hear about them until later in the season. It's one of those, it's the schmoozing weekend of Formula One. So I've heard a lot of people, pundits in the paddock saying, but it's their absolute favorite race to attend. And they said, forget the glamour and glitz behind it all, but you can actually go to Monaco in a way with like a reasonable budget. So something for all of you that have a bucket list item, if a Formula One race is a bucket list item, Monaco is probably the one to try to go for, because you will get really close almost at any apartment you stay in. You'll be
if
able
you
to
can
like,
get one, first of all.
I say just rent a kayak and go sit out in the harbor.
Yeah.
You can hear it. You only need to hear it ringing out against the hills. You don't need to see it.
You can board somebody's vessel. You can take over and commandeer somebody's ship.
That's right.
Valtteri's not using it for a couple hours.
being one of those blow up rafts in the harbor. I think if, you know, ideally, if you wanted to get an apartment, you gotta book it like 2 to 3 years advance. But if not, then, book in Nice. And then it's a very short train ride into Monaco, and you can do it on a budget. You can do Monaco, but you just got to plan. So,
yeah, it's on my bucket list for sure. One of these days. And my mom, who is crazy about sports, but not necessarily crazy about F1, but she'll watch races with me when I'm in the living room watching them, wants to go. She's like, if you go to Monaco, I'm going with you.
So, really?
Yeah. She wants to watch the race in Monaco. She's like, if I go to a race, I'm going to go to that one. So, yeah. I don't know what her reasoning is, because she's not like a shopper or anything to get all those brands that are out there. But
it would be awesome if the three of us went at the same time we did like a podcast from Monaco, you know?
Hey, that would be pretty cool.
That'd be awesome.
So thoughts about FP1, FP2?
Go ahead.
Any surprises?
TJ, you start off.
I mean, Ferrari did quite well. I was glad to see Leclerc at the top of the timesheets in FP2. His hometown.
Yeah. So everybody that didn't watch it yet, spoiler alert.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Well, you asked me how I thought about it.
No, I know. You're fine. You're fine. We're going to say it. but the Ferraris finished at the top of the timesheets in FP1 in it, because Carlos was at the top in FP1 and
he was second in FP1.
And second in FP2, right? So, towards the top. So,
podium places and still counts.
Leclerc had a gearbox issue in FP1. He sat pretty much the whole thing out. Fernando hit the wall coming out of turn one. Do you want to talk about that, David? You want to talk about Nando?
Not talk about it. It was interesting. As I was telling TJ earlier, that they were saying that he had too much speed, but to me, it just looked like the car understeered right into the barrier. Like he turned in. It looked like he turned in early, and then it just kind of understeered right into the barrier. I think it caught him by surprise.
It was not a very Alonso moment.
It wasn't. And then he's like, oh, I touched the barrier. I was like, nah, but man, you straight up hit the barrier. he was like, I accidentally touched. I was like, that wasn't a touch. So, but luckily it brought out a virtual safety car, I think really, really quickly. And it was cleared out of the way. It doesn't seem like it did any damage to the suspension. Lucky for him. So
who else had problems? Tsunoda hit the, it also crashed in FP2 and only put in like a handful of laps. So he didn't have a good.
As did Mick. But that was
good. As did Mick. Yeah. In Massenet.
So Tsunoda looked actually good in FP1 considering he's never been there. Right. Because when he was in Formula 2, they never raced there. And then Formula 3 doesn't race there. So I'm sure he's never been there. I think Schumacher raced there. I think Schumacher's been there in one category, if I remember correctly. Am I right, guys?
Yeah, I would think he has because I think Formula 2 raced there. Did they race there? Well, not last year, but he was there in 2019, I think, right?
Yeah, I think they raced there, but Tsunoda not. So,
well, it can be assumed that Tsunoda's probably done hundreds upon hundreds of laps of Monaco in the simulator at this point. Right. I don't think it's too unfamiliar.
Well, it's not the same thing.
No,
but. We love Sim, but it's really not the same thing.
No. Well, this is looking to be an interesting weekend. We made our funny predictions last week about this, and we were talking about who we thought the top three were going to be, and it seems like they're up there in speed. I mean, that's not a surprise that Lewis and Max are up there in terms of lap times. But the cool thing is, I was looking up some of the data, and the last three races we've had there, 17, 18, 19, we've had three different winners. So Sebastian won in 17, Ricardo won in 18, Lewis won in 19. So that's looking kind of promising, especially with these FP2 results. I know it's still early. We won't really know until the Qs arrive, but it's looking positive for the Ferraris. We thought they were going to perform well here. It is looking more positive, more and more positive for them. And they don't, I mean, we don't have full engine mode changes this year like we did in previous seasons. So their pace seems to be pretty good. It seems to be legitimate. What do you think?
I think they're not going to be in the top three or four due to how they usually respond in qualifying, and that's going to be the issue. So they show brilliance in practice, and then race pace has been very good, but flat out speed in qualifying, I can't see them.
Haven't they done the opposite this season though? Because I think they've been performing better in Qs than they have in race pace. With the exception of the last race, I mean, Charles just crushed.
I mean, Carlos has been better.
I'm sorry, Charles crushed.
Right. I think Carlos has been better in qualifying than race, but I think in general, the car still isn't there in qualifying. It's been able to show flashes of brilliance. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but
I feel like the opposite. I feel like they've out-qualified this season themselves, they performed better in quality than they have in race trim. I feel like Carlos, I'm going to put Carlos aside. Let's just look at Charles because Carlos is kind of coming to grips with everything, right? So if we look at Charles's pace though, like at the beginning of the year in Bahrain, did he qualify in fourth? And if I recall correctly, I got to look this up. My memory doesn't go back that far. Sorry, guys. the last race he qualified fourth, finished fourth. The one in Imola, he qualified like fourth and finished like sixth or something, right? Was that the case? I know it's tricky conditions, but still.
That was a whole lifetime ago, Ash. I couldn't tell you.
I know, dude. It's crazy. My brain, I still got that COVID brain, dude. I can't. My memory is not what it used to be. But at any rate, it's looking positive. This track tends to suit them. The only thing that I think there's an asterisk for me with Charles is that we haven't seen him yet reach Q3 in Monaco. I think I read that earlier today.
Finish a race?
Has he not finished in Monaco?
He hasn't finished a race in Monaco at all at any level.
Oh, snap. I don't remember that.
But what is that? So he's raced there twice? It's an interesting statistic.
Even the lower categories.
Oh, okay. Well, then that's okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Even the lower categories. So in Formula 2, he didn't finish there.
So, oh, snap. So. Dude, that changes everything for me.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about it. I didn't know that. Oh,
the curse of the Monégasque.
That's why I think he's going for it this weekend.
I hope he does.
Full send.
I don't think he's going to go full send because I think he wants to finish, to be quite honest.
He seems like he's got the maturity now to well, I mean, we've always talked about how his maturity is beyond his years. And I think David's probably more. I would probably lean into David's commentary. I know you're being funny, TJ, but I would lean into David's commentary of I were to put money down, I think if people are talking about this, which I haven't actually heard being brought up, I only heard about the Q3 thing. That's why I'm bringing that up.
They talked about
it. I would imagine that he would kind of stay calm, get it together, and yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So he was out of FP1 with the gearbox failure, and I'm sure it plays a little bit in his mind that he wants to finish the race. So I don't see him going full tilt. In reality, I don't see him going full tilt out. I mean, he probably wants to. He probably wants to show out. You know, I don't know if any of you guys saw that he was waving to his friends up in the balcony in FP1.
Yeah.
You know, which is just pretty cool to know you grew up there and your friends are up there. And, you know, so I think there is that weight that he does want to finish and he wants to put on his best effort. But I think if it's a matter of trying to find a tenth or a hundredth of a second, he's not going to risk, you know, hitting the Ferrari against a barrier. So.
But TJ, you have a thought on who?
No, I was going to make a joke. Wait, about what hitting what barrier?
That you have some opinions on who you think will hit the barriers this weekend.
Did I? Is it? Oh, I think Max and Max will probably crash. That's not new news. He hasn't crashed in a long time. I need to see a Max crash. When was it? Bahrain last year.
And the pressure is building.
Yeah.
The season. I mean, it's kind of like they need a victory. They need to pull points away from Lewis if they really, really want to stick this out or take the championship to him.
I also wouldn't be surprised if, not that it will necessarily matter, but if Botas shows up much more heavily on Saturday based off of what he said earlier this week, where he's just like, yeah, I'm not trying until Q3. If I have to during Q2, sure. But I'm not really putting in any effort until Q3.
What do you think about Valtteri? You think he has to perform in some certain way this weekend, David? I don't know that Valtteri has much.
I don't think he has to. It's just, again, what is he going to walk away with at the end of the season if this is his last season at Mercedes? And in my mindset, I'd say, well, what can I achieve while I'm still here? Win Monaco, man. You'll be, you know, you'll
as
be remembered.
As somebody who does quite a bit of hanging out in Monaco, I guess technically he lives in Monaco, even though he spends his time all over Europe. I'm sure it would be great to win in Monaco if you reside there, right? Just for the rest of your life, you can say, oh, well, I won the Grand Prix where I live.
Right. In the Mercedes, you know, I think there's, who knows whether he'll be back next year. We have opinions on that, but let's say this is his last year. Then I'm starting to think, which races can I win? Where can I maximize my performance and do things and achieve certain things that
career, you know,
people will remember. Yeah, career achievements. Yeah. And Monaco is definitely one of them, because you're probably not winning that in an Aston Martin or Haas or wherever else he's going to go next. So,
yeah.
He can make himself wide for 70 laps or whatever it is.
Yeah, he could, because I don't think anyone's going to really risk trying to throw it up. No. I mean, Max tried last year, but I think for the most part, if Bottas is in front, then Max and Lewis are going to think about, Can I finish in front of the other one and get points, and not mostly about winning the race? Because they'll just say, "Hey, it's a long season here. Let's be smart, both of them." So,
I see Max throwing it into the wall before Lewis for sure, and I see Valtteri being consistent and kind of level-headed more so as well this time around, especially considering what happened, I think, earlier this year. Let's not forget Imola, even though I don't think that was his fault. He's a smart driver, right? So he's a calm driver. He's always been a disciplined, patient guy. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think
that's what I mean as well. Is that he said coming into the weekend, you have to be refreshed. You have to be relaxed. Like, you just have to be able to put it all on the line. And so I don't think he was necessarily demonstrating what he can do today, especially with having the break before Saturday.
Yeah. If he finds himself, I think you're right. I think if he finds himself, like, he'll push on Q3, kind of like what you said. And that, apparently he said as well, right? So, and if he finds himself not near pace of Lewis or Max in that regard, you'll probably see a good disciplined race. Because then he'll accept the fact that he's probably not as fast. And if he's going to get them, it'll have to be based on them making mistakes. through pit stops, right? So
has anyone seen the weather report yet?
I was just about to ask Ash, what's the weather for this weekend?
It looks like it's gonna be dry.
I saved
it on my my list because I was just looking at it all week. I kept
what,
up.
What app are you using actually?
Yahoo.
Oh, using Yahoo?
And I looked at weather.com. So
there used to be this app. I don't think I have it anymore. Which was like Racetrack Weather, and you'd get every single weather report from a racetrack. And I'm telling you, that thing was so super accurate.
That's
pretty
dope.
They stopped it. You had to pay for it, but it was great, man. But I don't think they have it anymore.
I'll take a look at that afterwards. So out of the mid pack, Lando showed up. Mm-hmm.
Ricardo did not.
Daniel fell back behind.
Mr. Monaco.
The Alpines did what we thought they would do. They also looks like they've fallen behind as well. I know we both. I don't recall what you had in mind for them, TJ, but I don't think it was anything.
Nope. Enlightening. You've brought up multiple times outside of this conversation that Seb did it over Lance in both FP1 and FP2.
Yeah, that was positive. That looks very positive. And Lance has been here before, so he doesn't have that excuse of never having seen the track, right? It's cool. That's good for Seb. That's awesome to see him. I hope he comes away with a positive weekend. He had a great dad joke this weekend in the press conference.
Oh, an incredible dad joke.
TJ, why don't you tell everybody what that joke is? Did you remember it? Can you?
I'm sure I'll butcher it, but let me. I don't want to do it in a Seb voice, so give me a second to just translate it into my own head, and then.
David, did you get to hear it?
No, I didn't. I'm
oh, here we go, man.
So a matchstick is walking. am I already messing this up?
No.
A matchstick is walking up a hill. And he gets to the top of the hill and he's all worn out and he sees a hedgehog come over the hill and he says, "Oh, if I had known there was a bus, I would have taken that."
So anybody that doesn't catch it, it's because the hedgehog has a lot of spikes on it, which looks like a bunch of matchsticks stuck to it. And the hedgehog is the bus. And so he told that joke in a press conference
and nobody laughed.
Silent. And like legit silent. And the journalist was like, "Okay, so," and he literally just moved on to the next question, and then Steb stopped him and said, "Whoa, whoa, whoa! Like, you didn't even laugh." Like, it was. It ended up being really funny because it was terribly not funny.
In his defense, I just want to say that contrary to what people think, actually Germans do have senses of humor.
Seb definitely does. Seb's historical jokes are fantastic. Like, and his impressions. Like, we've seen Seb give impressions at galas and all kinds of stuff. So. It was nice to see Seb smiling and laughing again. I don't think we've seen that much of the last year and a half, 2 years.
For sure.
I mean, hopefully it's a bit of a corner turn for him and he can excel over Lance for the remainder of the season. Hopefully
that would be cool.
This is, you know, fifth, sixth race in that he's actually finding his footing. Maybe there's more in that Aston than we realize. I doubt it.
But maybe I doubt it.
I don't think it's the Aston. Yeah, I think it's a Seb thing. Mm. Well, that would be good just because... Get all the negative PR around Seb and all the bad energy that's been directed at him for not being, you know, a good driver this last year.
Do you think so though? Because I think the press is kind of rooting for him now after this whole debacle. It's not really a debacle, but just everything that went on with Ferrari, things that have come out from Drive to Survive.
I don't know that people were rooting for him. I feel like it was pretty neutral. There was definitely a lot more, but to your point, there was definitely more internet chatter maybe than press negativity out of the press, right? Yeah, so I get what you're trying to say there.
Well, what I'm saying, I feel like where before we thought it was maybe even or even partly Seb's fault, I feel now if you're to take a census, I think it's 60-40, people will say, well, Ferrari's to blame of what happened. You know, don't you agree with me or disagree? Because I think just now, in light of everything that's come out, in light of things like Drive to Survive,
the numbers are arbitrary.
Right.
Like, I get what you're saying. You're, but I would say, I don't know about that because I still think a lot of people would use Charles as their example as to why they were saying what they were saying about Seb, because Charles was outperforming him pretty damn well.
I think some of the sympathy for Seb has increased because of how poorly the Aston has been performing. If they had come out and been three, like third place, he would not be getting as much sympathy.
Okay. I think the sense
performing better theoretically.
Yeah, I think if we put numbers on something, I think the sentiment has definitely shifted. Yeah, for sure, the sentiment has. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I don't know. Is this really him coming around, or is this him just being good at Monaco because he is good in Monaco? We'll see. I mean, we still need a few more races, but I don't know. I have no confidence in that Aston in terms of it really coming back to life or anything this season. Like, and this is something we talked about before the season even started. Like, I never pegged Aston. I expected Aston to fall behind this season. So I kind of am where I am with them as far as Seb goes, the fact that he's pulling ahead of Lance a little bit more now, I feel like he's coming to grips with adjusting his style with this vehicle.
I haven't watched a lot of the press conferences, but does it look like he still really wants to be a racing driver?
This weekend he was all smiles.
I mean, this weekend, but yeah. just in general, has it looked like that up until this weekend?
Right, correct. And that's what, and I agree with you there. Seb, historically, we've seen him like when things aren't going amazing at a team, like literally they have to be like perfect and amazing. He's always down and out. Like, he always looks like he hates it. Does that translate to, I don't want to be a racing driver? I don't know that I'd say that, just because we have seen him historically, even when he was younger, during those early years during those last couple of years at Red Bull, when things weren't going great, or last season, I can't remember. He was just always upset. It just always looked like he was down. It always looked like he was not happy and didn't want to be there, but that doesn't necessarily mean he didn't want to. The fact that he's still here now, even after Ferrari days, I don't know. I think that he still wants to race. I would imagine he does.
Okay.
Your guess is as good as mine, since we're outside the bubble. So.
It's understandable for him to be discouraged, though, after a very tough Ferrari year and then going over to Aston and then not excelling in the way that some people expected.
So he made a comment this weekend, yeah, to build on that. And this might maybe give you some more... I don't know, maybe it changes your opinion or doesn't, David, but he made a comment this weekend. Somebody asked him, what advice would you give? What was it? What advice would you give Lewis? Gosh, what was the, how did they set it up?
All that coffee.
What advice would you give? It was, what advice would you give? I missed what you said.
I said, all that coffee is not working for you, huh? God,
you guys don't even know what's going on in front of me right now. My heart might explode in the middle of this episode. I've got four cups of coffee in front of me. They asked him, what advice would you give Max to beat Lewis? And his response was very genuine, very honest, and very real. And he was kind of smiling about it too. So this is why I think he's in a better place. And yes, he does want to continue to race. His response was, well, I failed, so there's not much I could probably say to him. so he was talking about his years at Ferrari.
That's a great answer.
Yeah, and it was incredibly honest and incredibly genuine and incredibly real and incredibly everything that we just mentioned. So, like, and he was smiling about it. And it was, and I think Lewis's remark, because Lewis was in the room too, and Lewis kind of looked at him like, basically kind of told him, like, you didn't really necessarily fail. It wasn't. And so it was really nice to see. And so I think he's grounded again. I think he's gotten all that happened last season, especially, out of his head. I think he's moving forward. And I think maybe that is showing now this weekend on the track too. So he's able to not think about what's going on in media and not think about the past. And now let's just move forward. Yeah. So it seems so. So hopefully that continues.
To me, it's amazing if you think about it, of how much that race in Hockenheim where he crashed out was a turning point for everything. You know, he was ahead in the points there.
We're talking 18?
Yeah, 2018. Yeah. And how that changed, you know, and again, you talk about someone who, you know, certain tracks and certain drivers, he doesn't race well in his home crowd. And Hockenheim, I mean, he had a decent result, I think it was last year or the year before when Mercedes totally messed up. But, you know, a guy who's German, who's from the area, he's leading the points, and how that kind of turned the whole Ferrari narrative, because he was in a car that probably should have beat Lewis and should have won, and how that just swung everything.
Even 17 could have gone very differently. Like, 17, that car Ferrari was running, this the 71H, the SF71H, was breaking records that year. I mean, they, that was the year they broke the record at Monza. They, that was the year Kimi took it at COTA as well. If you guys remember that last lap controversy with Max trying to take him, but going off track limits, and they took it back away from him. And like that year, the car was there. It was Ferrari made mistakes that year, you know, and Seb made mistakes that year. Wasn't that also 17? Was 17 the year Seb decided to lose his cool and smash into the side of Lewis at Baku? Or is that also 18?
I think that's 18.
Okay.
I think that's 18.
But yeah, but I mean, if you go back and look at how 17 played out, I think 17, 18, 19 could have been very different on paper. I mean, on paper, it looks like Mercedes absolutely dominated, but it really could have gone differently if you go back and watch.
The reality is they didn't really dominate if you watch the races. But it's just amazing, you know, think about that, how that kind of swung so much, and here we are.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, we could talk about the Ferrari engine fueling mapping issue for 19. I mean, another, I know people are probably making comments about that under the breath right now listening to this about 19, but still, I think 19 could have gone differently. Monaco is a place where it is the drivers. I mean, the car definitely shows up and plays a role, but also drivers do have the ability to pull ahead here, because the drivers that aren't perfect, that don't have amazing finesse and technical skill compared to their competitors, those drivers will gain an advantage here. We'll see that happen. We've seen that in years past with who they call the King of Monaco, Mr. Ayrton Senna, show up in cars that had absolutely no business performing against the top drivers and the top cars, and he would take wins even.
84 in the rain, great race.
Amazing. Yeah.
In the Tolman.
Yeah. If anybody hasn't seen that or knows about that story, that was Ayrton in a Tolman in rain, basically going to win the race before against Alain Prost. And Alain was able to call off the race the very last lap, basically, or very few.
It was dangerous conditions. Come on, man.
Yeah.
It was dangerous conditions. And Ayrton did the same thing, right? Like a year later, just not at Monaco.
Yeah. I mean, he learned from his competitor.
He did.
Yeah.
He
it's just so you guys know, the reason why they call Senna the King of Monaco is because he's the driver that's won the most number of races there in history, 6 in total. Nobody's done that, not even Michael or Lewis. Man, Monaco has some amazing races. We talked about you guys having to get F1 TV. Go get F1 TV, because there's amazing races to watch, especially the Monaco races. TJ, your two favorite races at Monaco, 82 and 96.
82 quickly, and 96.
Quickly talk
I love,
about
I love
them.
A race with very few finishers. It's something I like to remember when we come around to Monaco and everybody just calls it a parade now, because back in the day, that's not really how it was. It was all about, can your car survive, whether it's the rain or just taking it around the track 70 times. And it was something that, you know, not a lot of people did well, especially in the rain. And so in 82, when it got a little slick and Prost came out of the chicane du port and ran it into the wall, and nobody wanted to finish that race because of the rain, and Dieter Pironi dying out in the tunnel and getting picked up by Patrese on the last lap to take him around to the end. I mean, it's an incredible ending to a race. I love James Hunt's line. He's like, we've got a bit of a weird situation here where we're standing at the start finish line and nobody seems to want to give us a winner.
There was like 3 or 4 leaders on that final lap before the fourth win or whatever finish, right? Like, it was
Derek Daly crashed out. DeAngelis.
Yeah. They kept inching forward and inching forward. It seemed like they kept like crapping out. Yeah. That was a wild finish. And 96.
96.
Like three
Olivier,
finishes in 96,
Olivier Panis. Yeah. The last Frenchman to win a race before Gasly did it in Monza. Mm-hmm. Almost 25 years later. And only three finishers in that race. Panis, Coulthard, and Herbert.
That's the one where Schumacher crashed early on, right? And then I think he crashed like lap 2, right? And then Damon Hill was leading and looked like he was going to win. And then his car?
Yeah, everybody just kept kind of crashing out. Another great demonstration of how difficult Monaco can be, especially back in the day.
Yeah.
Considering, you know, people always talk about it's a procession of qualifying. Right. It produces an incredible number of moments, even whether it's on track or off track. I mean, Kimi seems to like this place. or at least we get to seem to get some Kimi moments here. 2006.
Oh,
Kimi's
yeah.
Kimi's car, what was it? The engine fire. And instead of going back to the pits with the team, Kimi decides to walk straight out to his yacht and drink the rest of the weekend.
Wouldn't you? Wouldn't you, though? Come on.
And that car is actually here in California. I actually found out it's at the Thermal Club. Somebody at the Thermal Club had it. Has it, I should say.
Really?
So, yeah. I was invited to go check it out a few months back, but I wasn't able to. So unfortunately for me. But what else? Kimi screaming in the pits for his steering wheel. That's another good highlight. You guys should go look up.
Who was? I can't remember who it was, but he said that he was going to pee in somebody's seat that he was borrowing his car. I don't remember who it was though.
Oh, I thought that was Button.
Judson.
Oh, I think it was.
But Button said that about whose car was he borrowing? Alonso's?
Was it Alonso? It was Alonso and Judson. Yeah.
Okay.
I just assumed you would have remembered the JB quote, dude. I don't know. Everything JB is Ash's territory.
Yeah, it was them. It was the two of them. That was a funny one. There's a lot of funny stuff. It just seems like people relax a little bit more in Monaco. They go there. They know it's going to be a fun weekend. There's a lot of parties afterwards and things. And just the whole environment and mood of the drivers is different.
You want to talk about relax, not Formula One, but Mahavir, when he just entirely cut that corner. Did you ever see that video at Monaco?
Which one? Mm-hmm. Repeat.
Mahavir. When he just completely cut the corner on the first corner and just like unabashedly just was like, nah, it doesn't matter.
Yes, I have seen that. I have seen that. I gotta look this up.
I actually have not seen this.
He just turns right.
Yeah.
And just goes way on the other side of the chicane.
Good for him.
Why they call him Lord Mahavir.
But another great, I guess, tribute to Monaco that's actually Formula One related. I'm sure both of you guys have seen Grand Prix, the footage from Grand Prix, the opening scenes, man, like that gives me chills. I could watch that
over and over again.
It's just something beautiful about it.
I have like three copies of that movie. And yeah. I have it on digital. Yeah. I've also purchased it on my Apple TV, but like I'm so in love with that film. Like
great film.
To this day, it's just Bruckheimer did such an amazing job. Like to this day, that thing holds up. Like I've shown people that have nothing to do with racing, and we watched it together, and they just love the film. It's so amazing. It's such a masterpiece.
But the sounds, you know, the sounds of Monaco, and just the way the car compresses it, and when you know, if any of our audience have time to go watch it, it's just a great tribute to not only Formula One, but at the beginning to Monaco, and it kind of. For us, we didn't grow up in the 60s, right? So we missed that kind of era, and we missed the allure that Monaco had that kind of preserved and got passed down, you know, to this day. So it's great to see that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, all this stuff that we talk about with Monaco and why it's so great, it all has to be attributed to the royal family, to the Grimaldis, to Prince Albert, right? Because they have an incredible passion for motorsport. They have an amazing collection and museum of cars for race cars and street cars. If it wasn't for them, this would 100% not be there. Like we talked about it very briefly in the last episode about the logistics of bringing F1 trailers and trucks and the entire circus to Monaco is just like, it's not perceivable. Like I can't imagine, I don't understand where they're putting all this stuff. They can't even make it to certain like, purpose-built circuits because the facilities aren't sufficient enough. So I still don't understand like how they can make it happen still in Monaco. It's amazing. And like,
well, and it has to exist within special parameters. It's not as long as the other races. Like most people would consider it not a safe place to race at this point. You have to have an entirely different setup just for Monaco so you can get around the hairpin.
Opposite lock. Yeah, the way they set up the steering for the cars in Monaco. So take a look at when they enter that section, the downhill section after the casino square. The tightest corners in Formula One are there, and their arms literally are like noodles wrapping around themselves, trying to get that steering wheel all the way around so they can make that corner. And we still see year after year, some drivers don't make the corners and they have to reverse back because they hit it wrong or they try to pass somebody going through there and they just make a mistake and they can't. The cars don't have enough opposite lock.
If you want to see me get frustrated, just put me in front of F1 2020 and try to watch me race around Monaco because I will absolutely crash at Lowe's 10 times. I can't do it on a damn controller. I don't know how they do it with their hands.
It's incredible. Yeah, it is. There's Dave. Do you have favorite moments in Monaco?
I don't know.
Or just some significant ones that you can think of?
Of course, the cinema one, but the whole Rosberg versus Hamilton, where Rosberg went out of the during qualifying, where he said no, it wasn't on purpose, and we'll say it wasn't. But that incident sticks out in my head. The fact when Ricardo was leading the race, and the whole pit failure, from Red Bull, which was unlike them, you know, just the looks on his face and Ricardo's reaction. Actually, I think it's one of the times where I felt Ricardo kind of act like a spoiled brat, because let's be honest, Red Bull, when it comes to pit stop and pit strategy, Red Bull, for the most part, they're one of the better teams to ever do it, you know, and he was just kind of unlucky. And then he's really pissed and it didn't really look so good the way he handled it, but then he comes back and he wins it. So those are moments. Those are recent moments. All of the older moments, I'm in total agreement with you guys. And then even thinking back, to McLaren going back and winning there with Häkkinen, you know, some great moments in Monaco, but yeah.
JPM had some great races there. I remember him and Michael duking it out in early 2000s, and Kimi had some great moments there. Talking about Ricardo, he has a really iconic moment there when he won the race and diving into the pool.
Oh, like, is it a dive or is it a belly flop?
The little like angel like flop, whatever plant. You want to call it. Yeah, with his arms out. That's really iconic. So many iconic
Brady throwing the football. That's a pretty iconic moment.
Brady throwing the football off the boat. Yeah. Mm. To Daniel, right, as well. Yeah, that was, I mean, there's so many fun highlights you can look up from this weekend. It just always brings out the best in all the drivers. And so many celebrities show up to this one, which drives, again, the environment, the entertainment level and everything. So look it up. Just look up Monaco F1 highlights, like moments. It's tons of cool stuff.
And then get depressed that you're not there. So, yeah.
I know. And then it'll just upset you. Yeah. Which is why you need 4 cups of coffee.
Yeah.
To try to get your high, to get back up in energy. So the other cool thing that happened this week, McLaren revealed the other, or what teams and drivers do this weekend, is they have custom one-off liveries as well. A lot of drivers have their own custom one-off helmets for this weekend, helmet designs. And then the teams also have sometimes custom liveries. David and I were really excited, and I'm sure you were too, TJ.
Talk about that. I'm going to go get my shoe off.
Okay. All right, is it a golf horseshoe? Is that what we're looking at? All right, there it is. Yeah. So the McLaren revealed their golf livery this weekend, the special livery, which is freaking gorgeous and stunning, and a throwback to the heritage and
my backup pair.
There you go. of the golf liveries and iconic, the iconic liveries from golf cars from the 60s and 70s and 80s and stuff. So it was really cool to see. When we heard the announcement last year that golf was joining McLaren, that was like our big thing. We're like, yes, they're going to bring the livery back at the beginning of the year. And then when we saw the livery at the beginning of the year, it was still a cool looking livery, but it wasn't the golf one. We were kind of saddened about that. So it's nice to see it this weekend.
I do like it. I think it looks a little pale. As you know, I'm a big fan of the golf livery because besides the shoes, of course, the heritage Porsche and things like that.
Yeah.
I wish they ran it year round. It looks a little bit, the blue looks a little pale on TV a little bit. Is it just me? It looks a little bit paler.
It looks fine.
It's better than the blue on their normal livery.
Yeah, I agree. But it is so cool. And just like that, man, they've got the best livery car on the grid this weekend. You know, and I don't know. F1 should know by now that we love the heritage part of Formula One. And that both of you guys love the heritage part of Formula One. And it would be cool if they had like almost mandated that every Monaco or every Silverstone you had to run.
That was an idea we pitched.
Oh, did you? Yeah, we won't talk about that. But how cool would it be that at certain tracks, once a year at a certain track, you have to run a heritage, livery. It would be really cool.
Event.
Yeah, heritage. So
that would be amazing. So we talked about the royal family. We talked about FPs. What are you guys hoping to see this weekend? Any surprises with race results? You hoping somebody shows up or doesn't show up?
I say this with every intention of not meaning any sort of ill physical will towards Max, but I really want to see a Max crash at some point in the next couple
races. I don't. I want to. I'd rather see a Lewis failure. Like
I want to see somebody else on the podium. Okay, we had so many interesting podiums last year, and now all we have is one Norris podium, and then it's all Bottas and Max and Lewis. What is it? 2019? Stop it.
I want to see this championship continue. So I'd like to see the Red Bulls come out above the Mercedes somehow, some way. I don't think they
somehow
have the pace.
Got that top 10 in F1.
So we need an incident.
I'll say with TJ, like I if that's going to happen, I hope it doesn't happen at Monaco. But if there's an incident, I hope it's both Lewis and Max out, so you still have a level playing field, and then somebody else swoops in and gets a different podium. You know, would be great. But I would hate to see like one or the other, Max or Lewis, crash out, because we do want to see this title fight go down at least past the summer break.
All right. And how about Max and Lewis both crash out, and then we can just have one race without them?
Well, that would be interesting, but I'd rather see a race where there's overtaking, you know, like they crash out at a place where you can actually see some overtaking and not just a procession.
Overtaking in Monaco. That's a bit too much to ask.
That's what I'm saying. So not in Monaco, maybe at a slightly wider track.
So Max and Lewis crash out turn one, and then it's
Monza. Turn one in Monza.
It's Leclerc and then Bottas and then Lando, and that's my perfect weekend. And maybe we get a little bit of rain in the last 10 laps and see a couple people spin. Be perfect.
Yeah. Some weather would be great.
I could use it.
Doesn't look like we're getting the weather, unfortunately.
Yeah. I'm curious to see what the gap will be between Sainz and Leclerc. And other than that, I'm not expecting too many surprises. Maybe, you know, if Gasly could sneak in for a podium, like third, oof. How great would that be? You know,
I still think the Alphas are behind the McLaren and the Ferraris, but yes, that group of Charles, Carlos, Lando, and Gasly is like, it's the battle that I'm like really like.
Alpha with the right pit strategy could try to do something if there's an opportunity.
It's their race pace. It's their race pace though. Like
race pace in Monaco. Just make your car wide. Gasly can be plenty wide.
Yeah, but I mean, still, they just haven't put it together on Sunday. It's just they haven't been able to put it together on Sundays.
So let's really quickly. You think teams, the top teams, are going to go with hard or medium? Try to, you know, because track position is so important.
Yeah.
Stick with hard and do a long run and then just make those hards last and go hard soft, or you think they're going to try to go medium soft?
I think you're going to see Kimi do that. Kimi's notorious for doing the long runs and for taking those gambles, and especially like we even saw him. He was the one car on the grid in Spain who had an alternate tire compound at the start of the race. So I would foresee someone like Kimi trying that and some of maybe the bottom guys. I was about to say bottom feeders. That's terrible. But I think like maybe a Williams with Russell or some of those guys trying to go for something like that, hoping there's a couple of safety cars and just staying out on track. FYI, the compounds that are at this event are the softest compounds in the Pirelli profile. So it's C4, C3.
I'd be inclined to go medium hards, pit early, and then try to just let other people hopefully end up behind you and just stick out those hards through the end of the race.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. That's a good point, man. If some maybe the softs from the top teams won't even be seen in the race. You know, you get through Q2 in mediums, and then the race, it's medium hard. So because the compound's so soft.
Yeah. Yeah, it could be. It's likely. I mean, we'll see. It's going to be interesting to see what Sergio does. Because if Sergio, like we talked about his qualifying performance, if Sergio is not there on performance in Q1, Q2, like pay attention to Q2, obviously, because those are the tires they're starting on. So it'll be interesting to see what he decides, considering it's Monaco. He's a wild card for me this weekend. I'm not expecting much, but I can see it going towards him with something like this happening with a safety car. Him taking a risk on strategy as well. And I wonder if Red Bull too have now four races in, this is the fifth race, right? What Red Bull's going to do for him as well. Are they just eliminating him from being a part of Max's strategy? because he hasn't seemed to be there in most races for them anyway. So they will be willing to gamble with him even more nowadays.
I don't think they've given up just yet. I think a few more races, but we'll see what they do.
So what's your predictions? A lot of smiles.
I'll stick by my, I'm gonna stand by my prediction. I don't want this to be the podium, but I'm gonna stand by what I said last week. It's the only time I've ever been able to remember what my prediction was. It'll be Lewis, Charles, Max. I'd rather it be Valtteri, Charles, Lando, but that's not gonna happen.
All right, David.
Do I have to pick?
We gotta predict something. We don't have to know that.
Yeah, I think all signs point to Lewis. I think it's going to be, I'm going to say Lewis, Max, Charles.
That was my prediction last week, and I'm going to stick with that too.
Lewis, yep. Max, Charles.
Yep.
Hey, one quick thing we didn't talk about, and maybe it's on your notes, so sorry, don't mean to.
No, bring it up, over man. Here. We got it.
Norris's contract.
Oh, yeah. didn't even mention that, Ash. You were talking all about the.
Was it? But that wasn't a surprise to me. Like, he got a contract renewal for two more years.
Wasn't a surprise, but
it's the first. It's the first one that we've heard of the year.
I will say this though: the one thing that's really good for Lando is that he is now getting paid much closer to Daniel's contract, which has to be a good confidence boost for him.
Do you think he should have signed this contract? And this is again with the younger generation being, I don't want to say fanboys, but. You know, Leclerc gives Ferrari. Leclerc could have held out, right? And I think Lando could have held out, and things would be different.
Okay, two questions. Yeah. Does Leclerc? I don't actually know if Leclerc manages himself or if he has an agent or a manager, and also Lando.
So, I mean, what difference does it make?
It does make a difference because is Leclerc making his own decisions or is he getting consultation? Because and then same thing for Lando, because when you used to have Seb doing that, and Seb used to manage himself early on, and then he got a manager.
I don't know. I would assume that because they're so young that they both would have managers when it comes to contracts. But because Lando was peaking, is this the right, you know, what do you think? Because I have my opinion. Is this the right time to sign a new contract? He's kind of becoming a hot commodity. And talking about, we've talked about how McLaren has already decided to build around him. That was obvious. You guys have seen the commercial for the Golf livery, right? Ricardo was nowhere to be found. Right? Yeah. Ricardo was nowhere to be found. Right?
If I'm Lando, I don't see a place for myself at Red Bull, Mercedes, or Ferrari at any point in the next few years. So McLaren's are going to be your best option. I think you should sign, especially with the salary caps coming in. Also, you got to sign early so you can get as big a piece of that pie as you can before your teammate gets any of it.
And then also the other thing I would say, David, is we don't know. Let's say we're going to presume he has an agent and a manager. And we're going to presume that he shopped him around. And this is the best deal for the next two seasons. It's only a 2-year contract. So I imagine the same thing. Like, things are looking positive. I think the fact that what you just mentioned, where he is looking to be their number one, they're building things around him. They're doing things like this, this commercial, like the Golf livery commercials and everything were only him. It was all him.
Right.
That seems like this team is doing all these things for me. Yeah. So I would want to be here for another two seasons. McLaren also has been really on the rise. They're in a really good position right now. They've kind of ironed out all their financial problems they were having for the next foreseeable future. So it seems like a good signing. I would actually say that Lando's signing is probably more, I don't want to use the word intelligent, but it's probably a better contract than what Charles got. I think Charles was the 5-year that Charles signed was probably a little too, I would have probably signed 2 if I were Charles' place, or 3. But I don't know that I would have gone further than 3. Charles, I think signing on for 5 was a very interesting call. Because I think Charles could have probably, just for the sake of if I was his agent, I was like, I would advise him, you could probably make a lot more if we signed for just 2 or 3 and then we re-sign again.
Right.
His talent's not going anywhere. His talent's only going to get better at that point. So
I mean, I agree. Let's be honest. You could, let's say Lewis retires this year, right? You could sell either Leclerc or Norris to Mercedes. I mean, by strength of what they've been showing and what they've been performing, especially Charles
at the especially time Charles. That he, yeah, at the right. time that Charles did his, I agree 100%.
You know, and F1's, I mean, the likelihood of any craziness like this happening is low, but you know, you can imagine like Norris, Russell, imagine, you know, at Mercedes or Norris, even Verstappen. I mean, things,
don't,
stranger
don't
things
get
have happened.
People's hopes up, David. Stop it.
It's
stop
it's
it.
Just fantasy. We're just,
I'm
going to
see bad rumors floating all online tomorrow about a Lando.
And that's
Russell
what we have you for to go and to knock them down, you know, but yeah, just imagine things like that. There can be interesting possibilities. But yeah, I just thought it was interesting to already come out the box and say, hey, another 2 years when I think he's peaking towards being a hot property and a hot commodity. He's likable. He's, we you know, we don't need to go over all the stuff that we've talked about Norris over the last 3-4 weeks, right? We've got him on a pedestal already. But yeah, I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah. No, well, it's warranted for sure. So any other final thoughts on anything this week or Monaco?
Can a certain somebody keep it out of the bay? We won't name him.
Oh, Lord. They have a lot of barriers now. These days, we likely won't see a car. We likely won't see a Haas in the bay. I'm sorry.
No, for would be awesome.
I think should get people's hopes up for that one. Don't get your hopes up for Lando and Russell, but do get your hopes up that we'll see somebody in the bay. Oh, the man, cars are fast enough to make it through those barriers. We saw.
I don't wish physical harm on anybody, man. No.
I don't wish physical harm on anybody either. I'm just saying it would be nice to see somebody in the bay with no injuries.
Well, he. Yeah, I'm not even gonna talk about it. Okay.
It doesn't have to be him. It could be anybody. Just throw Christian Horner in the bay. They don't have to be in a car. I just want to see somebody from the paddock in the water and not the pool, not belly flopping in a pool.
Okay. Well,
that's my end rant. I have nothing else to say about Monaco.
Okay. Well, I'm really excited about this weekend. Can't wait to see qualifying. Qualifying at Monaco is absolutely exciting because we do know that it does tend to dictate a lot for Sunday. But still, even Sunday will be exciting and it will be fun. Where are you guys watching it from? From home? TJ, you coming down?
No.
Dang it.
Sorry. I don't have my car right now. I'm driving a truck and there's no way I'm driving a V8 down to LA during a gas shortage. Come on.
Fair enough.
I'll tell you where I'm watching it from.
There you go. Yes. Well, wherever you're watching it from, enjoy. David, are you you guys don't have a race weekend this week, right?
No, I don't. I am going to watch it from home, but hopefully next year, the driver's club that I'm connected to, man, I hope we're going to have a viewing party. I'm trying to pitch that already. A couple of viewing parties.
Yeah.
And
let them know how successful ours were.
Yeah, they're, well,
we are proof of concept.
We've been talking about it. Do you guys know, is this the first time in a while that there is no Indy 500 and no NASCAR
on a Monaco Grand Prix weekend?
On the Monaco Grand Prix weekend, right?
Yeah.
So Monaco's kind of standing alone.
Yeah.
I'm sure, which sure is the nice. Other series see it the other way. It's like, oh, there's no F1 on our weekend. But let's be honest. When that super Sunday happens, I'm only really focused on one race, and that's Formula One.
Did the Kentucky Derby already happen? Entirely unmotorsport related, but I always feel like that happens around the same time as Monaco.
No, I think it's, I'm I think not it's about in horse 2 weeks. I think it's in June.
Okay.
I think it's always
that's the only race that matters to me after Monaco, and I don't care about Indy. I don't care about anything in NASCAR, but I'll watch that. Anyway, that's neither here nor there on an F1 Geeks podcast.
Are you a gambling man? Do we?
Can you tell?
Yes.
All right. Well, wherever you're going to watch it from, anybody out there too, enjoy. It's going to be a great weekend. Going to have a lot of fun. I hope your drivers win, and I hope nobody ends up in the bay. So with
all the drivers, I hope all the drivers that you like win.
If they end up in the bay, I hope they're on a boat. How about that? All right, guys, enjoy the weekend. Great talking to you as always. And anybody who wants to join the fan chatter show, remember, email us info@f1geeks.com. We do them after the races, and we do have a short screening process for that. So if you want to join a particular race, just email us. We'll talk it out, and yeah, should be a lot of fun. So, all right, guys, take care. Great as always. Ciao.
See you next week.
David, there's you.